Power up suits and welcome into a special episode of House Party Protocol. That's right, two for the price of one this week. Your favorite MCP podcast, you know it is, don't lie to yourself, is doing a little double duty. And the reason why is because we got some very interesting new rulings on the rules forum from Pagani himself. And also from the moderator of the rules forums, Nick Goldar. He's, you know, the guy for rules clarifications. And with me today is a accuser, if you're familiar with the TTS League. If you're not familiar with that, it's basically like rules lawyers. Think of it like that. Like the guys that's like, hey, what's this rule? I mean, all right, come on. You know what's right. It's Merzane, everybody.
Yes. Rules lawyer supreme. Well, not supreme. Nick Goldar is rules lawyer supreme. He is the law.
That's right.
He is the Judge Dredd, but
I know the rules supreme intelligence.
But thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, especially in such short notice, because this is one of those things where, like, kind of blew up. For those of you that don't know, we're going to talk about kind of what changed here in just a minute. But last night, this kind of just exploded amongst the accusers, right?
Yeah. I literally went to bed and woke up with even more discussion.
Nice. So what happened is we had Thoris asked a question on the rules forum about rerolls and about the timing of rerolls. And it got clarified basically that if you pay for a reroll on an attack or defense and the ability that you're using to pay for it, such as Shuri or MODOK, says after this character rolls attack or defense dice, you may do the thing. Well, you have to preload that payment before you actually roll your crits. And that's definitely weird and different than what we've been doing before, right, Merzane?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, up until this point, the mode of operation has been, you know, roll your attack or defense dice, whichever one you're doing, roll your crits in, then pay for your abilities. This new change means you don't, if you're attacking, you don't get to see defense dice first. You don't get to see your crits first. So if you're rolling crits, you don't know how many to re-roll. I think we'll talk a little bit more in depth about it in a minute. But if you have multiple effects at once, you have to preload them all at the same time. So you may not need them all.
Yeah.
So it's a really big change or clarification. I think the important thing I've been reading is that this isn't a change. This is how it's supposed to have always been played, as different and weird as it is.
Yeah, and we'll have a discussion on that in just a minute as well. And then the next change is kind of more of a clarification, and this one comes straight from Pagani himself, and it's one that seems unnecessary in my opinion, but we'll get into it here in a second. But basically, the change is when using a movement tool or movement action, whenever you're moving a model, you can't use the model's base as a form of measurement. For instance, if you're trying to measure range one from an objective token, you can't place the movement tool, move the model, and then jimmy the model if you quote-unquote have enough movement to be within range one of an objective. So it's kind of weird and wonky, right?
This whole ruling is... I'm still not fully wrapping my head around it yet. You can do stuff like lay a one down by a template and then place your model there. But if, say, you didn't have enough room to make it, like, or you didn't have enough movement to get there in the end, you can't, like, reset and go back and move, which we already knew that was a thing that's clarified already. But you also, it's weird. I'm excited to talk it out because I'm not entirely, like, I haven't wrapped my head around it fully either. It's really weird.
Yeah, and shout out to Nate, who was actually supposed to join us today. However, you know, new dad stuff takes precedence. We all can understand that, at least in some sliver, whether we have kids or not. But he was supposed to be here with us, and he actually posted a lot of pictures on the rules forum about, like, is this okay? And Pagani hit back with, the one that he used is a Koye with a medium tool placed, she's at the end of it, and then a range one tool is measured from the token, right? And he says, is this okay with the movement? And he shows that a Koye is down at the end of the tool and then within range one of that thing. And the response is, yes, that's fine. But the biggest question I have with all of this is, like, the up above that, he says, Pagani says, if you know you have enough movement to make a move and you just place the range rulers within the objective and then you place the mini, then what is that okay? That's the question. And Pagani says it's illegal movement because you didn't follow the rules of movement. Just because you assume you have the range doesn't mean that you follow the rules of the game. And that, to me, is, I think, the weirdness in all of this, is that we all can say, okay, I'm placing the medium movement tool. I've got it overlaps the token I'm aiming for. So therefore, let me just place the range one because we all, you know. And I think that's one of those things that this is an unnecessary clarification because we all, I think it's an intent thing versus rules as written, but it's also like a, in a highly competitive environment, I could see someone wanting to enforce this, right?
Yeah. So real quick on that one, let me make sure. That's number four, right, on this thread?
Yes, number four.
I think what that's specifically addressing is moving without a template. So, like, my guy is an inch away from the thing, or not, I guess 2 inches away from being next to an objective. Can I just, you know, move him without an, or just say I just double moved to the point. Is that okay? Well, technically, no. People are going to shortcut it, which, like, we're going to shortcut it.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to shortcut it. If I'm a mill, if I get pushed off a point short and I move medium, I'm just going to look at my opponent and say, hey, I just moved back an end. And most people will. But that, I think that's specifically referencing, like, the technical, legal, quote-quote, way to do it is putting the template down, putting the range ruler down, and then moving on the movement template to be sure. So yeah. that is a bit weird. That one was worded a bit weird, and it took a little bit of, like, me reading it a couple times to come to that possible conclusion.
Yeah. So all with this movement shenanigans now, does this change anything with how we play the game, or was this more of just an unnecessary clarification that we all kind of just assumed, yet has been applied in such a way now that when we're at those highly competitive tables, for instance, the tournament that's about to start from the TTS Season 5, like, it's going to come into play in those situations?
I don't think so. So, and one thing that we talked about a little bit internally in our accuser's lounge is that, you know, the proper way to move a model, technically speaking, is to just pick it completely up off the table and place it where you want it on the movement template.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really realistic in TTS.
Yeah.
So we're probably not going to do a whole lot of enforcing of this in TTS because of technical limitations and the fact that, like, you just, it's be so wonky even if we could get it to work. It's probably not worth the effort. In real life, it probably doesn't affect anything. Most people just pick their model up and place it anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's good clarification for, like you said, really competitive events. If there's something, like, really nitty gritty that's got to get down.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have some precedents for specific things. Like, what do you do if you try to move on to a point, or you try to move to an area and then you realize your base is too big or you can't fit the model on the terrain? Well, then you have to, you can't remove the template. You have to keep the template in the position it is and move it somewhere else along that template. So yeah. We got that clarification. That's a good change. But I think for your average casual play, this specific change or this clarification won't change anything. I think everyone's going to be playing the same way.
Right. Yeah. And to your point about the thing where the change of you can't move the template once you've already kind of initiated the move, right? Like, so if you can't fit, okay, well, you just got to place it somewhere else. I mean, I've definitely done that in a game where it's like, well, I've already committed to this, so let me just go a little bit shorter than maybe I want to go or something like that. But it's also like, you know I can't measure with the base. So like on TTS, it's very easy to like hit the move button, you know, where it automatically moves them and kind of play in that way. But you know, I try not to do that. I am definitely king of take backsies sometimes, so like I apologize for that to anyone that's played me and didn't like it. I'm sorry, but you know, I treat this game pretty casually. So with that being said, though, I definitely understand, like, well, you know, you can't fit there, so you got to play it a little short. But like, you know, let me move this, let me adjust this just enough, like, and then you know, you place that movement tool down and it's just, I don't know, it could just get wonky. And one of those things that I think it's going to really affect the more competitive scene. Casually, I will go ahead and say, do whatever the hell you want. Like, just have fun with the game. But in terms of, like, when you're in a competitive environment, if you're doing a local tournament or something like that, I would say try to stick to the movement stuff as much as possible, you know?
Yeah. It's like, the big thing is, you know, I've heard some people talk about like this hurts, it does hurt casual players trying to go to like organized play, right? But I mean, if you just play with your friends at your house or at the game store once a week, you don't really care. I mean, just play how it's fun. I think this movement thing is a really technical thing.
Exactly.
And I'll be honest, like I already knew that you couldn't remove the template, like or figured it. I personally don't care if I'm playing with someone and they're like, oh, I can't move there. Typically, I'll be like, well, then you can just go somewhere else. I don't care.
Right.
Even as a competitive player, because for me, I played a lot of War Machine, and there was a lot of times where I would win or lose a game because someone didn't eyeball something right, or they mismeasured, or, oh, they couldn't quite. Anyway, you couldn't get quite to the position you wanted to, or you got a little too far forward, a little too far back. And I would rather play the game than win on millimeters.
Yeah.
So or lose on millimeters. So that, for me, it, like, even in my regular games, like in my competitive games, I'll probably be like, you can just do it.
Right.
You could just put it back.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm with you. And I think that that's kind of how I'm going to end up being about it as well. And it's a game flow thing also. Like, you know, you're every little bit of technicality and complexity that you add also can potentially increase the analysis that takes place. And you know, just as well as I do, some people take a long time to make decisions.
Yes.
I'm super guilty of that sometimes myself. I mean, I definitely have analysis paralysis at times. And now with this movement, and then also with the reroll thing that we're going to really get in depth here in just a second, you know, it really just takes that complexity level and that mental load up another level, especially in that competitive environment where time matters. And, you know, we've been encouraged nowadays to play with timers. And when we went to Nate's thing, the Natacon, whatever we're calling it.
The NATOcon.
out in Nashville, you know, it was a hard timer. Like, he put a hard timer on it, and that was fine, but my goodness, you have got, with this rule, and now with the reroll rule, if you're playing in that competitive environment, you've got to be cognizant of that.
Yes, absolutely. Again, these are really competitive. This is a really competitive change. The dice one, we'll discuss that. This is a really competitive change. If you're going to an event, you really need to be aware of how this works, which, like I said, I'm still kind of wrapping my head around it.
Yeah.
It is going to be a little weird. I think if you were already playing as the rulebook initially prescribes, it's probably not a huge shift. Like, I think I don't have to change too much.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit more lock in. Like, you don't, like he said, take backsies. Like, the game doesn't allow for take backsies.
right,
in the hardest sense of the rule. So just be aware of that.
Yep. And the final thing I'll say about this is that you still can put the movement tool down next to the model and move it around, but once you commit to like where you're putting the tool, it's done.
Once you pick the model up,
exactly.
Like chess, once you pick, and I think it's in blitz chess in high levels, if you touch a piece, that's the piece you move, even if it hurts you.
Right. Right.
And this, so now it's if you put the template down, you pick up the model, you are moving the model. It has to go somewhere legal on that template.
Exactly.
And that's your action.
Exactly. So just keep that in mind and, you know, just remember to play and have fun. That's what I'll say about this. This is one of those rules that somebody out there can abuse and try to, you know, one-upsman on you, you know, or gotcha or whatever you want to call it. But just have fun. And again, if you're at an event and you know someone's newer to the game, just be cool, man. Like, that's all I got. Just be cool, you know? And there you go. So now let's move on and talk about this crazy reroll thing. And I'm going to start by kind of reading what the forum post was. And by the way, if you want to check out these forum posts for yourself, they will be linked in the description of this episode. So make sure to go and check these out for yourself, because us talking about it versus you reading it might provide some additional clarification. So Thoris, for some reason, thought this was a good question to ask. What timing step or steps is rolling attack or defense dice supposed to represent? Then he mentions Shuri, Black Panther, Beast, these characters. We all assume that they resolve in step 9. Domino and Loki, however, appear to establish that either step 6 or 7, which reference specifically rolling attack dice, rolling defense dice, that's step 6 and 7 respectively, is at least the first timing step that is the trigger for that wording. And there are official statements backing it up about when those things happen. You can check out other rules forms, but basically, Domino, it's accepted because it specifically says on her card before resolving crits, right?
Let me check.
Yep, let's pull
That's
it
a
up.
Good question. Domino says, after this character rolls attack, defense, or dodge dice, but before the resolve critical step.
Yeah. So there's completely unambiguity?
Unambiguity?
Unambiguity. There you go.
I don't know if that's a word, but it is now.
Yeah, it is now. It's in the HPP lexicon, so it's a thing. So there's nothing ambiguous about that statement. It makes it perfectly clear when that happens. And it also makes it pretty clear that you can use her probability manipulation to preload it, so to speak. Can spend, you know, one or more power, or for each power spent this way, it can treat a failure as a critical for the remainder of the attack. So if you roll that failure initially and you spend one power, well, that failure now becomes a crit. You add a die for it as if it were a crit. Subsequently, you can preload it, whereas if you roll additional failures, they become crits as well, but they don't explode. And to me, completely makes sense that this happens immediately after you roll your attack or defense dice, or dodge dice in this case, right? Like, there's nothing ambiguous about that, right?
Right.
Okay. So the question is about when Shuri or MODOK or Beast, when they spend their stuff. So back to Thoris's question. We know that the time and ability triggers and is paid for versus when it resolves can be different. So based on how we handle Loki and Domino, I would think that Shuri and etc. need to pay their power in step 6 or 7 and then resolve the rerolls in step 9. And I'm going to leave it there because he adds a little context, but it doesn't matter. And Nagoldar says, effects that trigger when rolling attack or defense dice will trigger and be paid for after that step occurs. This will be at the end of step 6 for special rules that trigger when rolling attack dice, and at the end of step 7 for special rules that trigger when rolling defense dice. We got Nuke Squad in here with a clarification. To clarify then, does this mean we have to prepay for MODOK's reroll before he sees the result from his critical rolls? For Domino, pretty clear. MODOK's reroll was worded to seem that it was pretty open-ended. Nigoldar says to that, yes. So, clarify, before MODOK sees his crit roll, he has to pay to do his reroll before he even sees his crit roll. That's crazy. And then an additional question that we asked here for additional clarification. Art Die Art says, what is the timing of the X-Force leadership Wetworks? And this has a lot of context to other abilities like Zemo's reroll, the Inhumans reroll, Deadpool's reroll, stuff like that. It doesn't specify when you have to choose. I assume you do it in step 9 of the timing chart. And it says step 9 of the Appendix A chart. So, yeah. It's all of this. There's a couple other things on this forum post that I encourage everyone to go and check out. Because when I first read this, Josh, you were in the thread with me and Nate last night. What did I say? Holy shit, this breaks the game.
It changes everything.
But it doesn't just... The reason why I thought it broke the game was because when in the initial response, before all these other responses happened, it was talked about effects that trigger when rolling attack or defense dice. If you read Zemo, if you read Inhumans rerolls, if you read Deadpool rerolls, it says after rolling attack or defense dice. So to me, I interpreted that to mean that you have to do that reroll before you get your crits. Now, turns out it's not that way, but this is an unnecessary complication to the way that we've been doing things for nearly 2 years now.
Yeah, apparently this is, from what I have heard and seen, this is the way it was always intended to be played.
I call it bullshit.
This changes nothing for, like you're saying, like Zemo and stuff. They still reroll the same way. This is specifically for the wording after a... I'm going to estimate the wording a little bit here. After a character rolls attack or defense dice, or dodge dice, after a character rolls dice, they may spend to use this superpower. That now triggers a certain timing window, or has always, as I said, which is after you roll that dice. So, for example, MODOK, I'll pull MODOK up here, and I will read it exactly and kind of go over an example. MODOK says, for P-Brain, MODOK's genius is infinite. After this character rolls attack or defense dice, it may spend any amount of power to use this superpower. For each one power spent, this character may reroll one of its own attack or defense dice. So like you mentioned with Domino, now the way it works is if he makes an attack, he rolls 6 dice. If he has 2 crits and 4 blanks, he may spend any amount of power right then to reroll as many dice as he pays power for.
Mm-hmm.
You do not get to see the Defender's roll yet, because that's at step 7, and you're currently in step 6. So if you pay 4 and then those 2 crits roll into something that you don't, you would also want to reroll, you only get 4 rerolls total. Now you also don't go over. So let's say for some reason you roll 4 successes, 2 non-successes and a crit, you pay 3 thinking the crit might be not a success. It's a success. You don't have to reroll, cause it's, you may reroll.
Right.
So you can overpay, just like you can overpay with Domino for no effect. Or if you roll failures on the crit, right?
Right.
The other weird thing is for stacking effects like MODOK or Shuri and how they interact with Black Panther's leadership, King of Wakanda. So it also has that same timing window.
Right.
So you have to spend for Shuri and Black Panther's leadership ability rolls at the same time. So yeah. It's not I'm going to roll my, like I, we've been playing as roll my attack dice. I don't like that roll. Roll three for Shuri, and then re-roll one of those with the King of Wakanda re-roll.
Right.
Now you look at your initial attack roll. You decide when you want to use those paid abilities, and then roll them. So it changes a lot, especially for Wakanda. Wakanda is probably the biggest one affected by this, with all the stacking rerolls and how, right, how they spend for it.
And the frustrating thing to me is that you pay for this thing after your initial roll, and it's just really weird and complex. You pay for it after your initial roll, but you still do other shit. And I'm sorry I keep cussing a little bit. This one's got me a little fired up. All right, this one's got me a little fired up.
It's good.
you just keep doing other stuff until you get to the point when you actually do the thing. And that's just, like, I understand that that's like a timing thing, and there's other things in the game that have some odd timings. Like, I get that. But it just feels like this knee-jerk, all of a sudden, we're going to address this thing when... I don't know.
It's a little jarring when you've been told for the past year and a half or so that you've been playing the game wrong. And it's not just you, it's everyone.
Right. Not only that, but I'm pretty sure that the designers themselves played it wrong on stream. Like, come on.
I did actually share an instance where they had, and I know that they have the... they have a lot of, like, they've got designer brain. If you're familiar 100%. With that or unfamiliar with that concept, designer brain is where, you know, characters and concepts go through multiple iterations. So when they're playing on stream with Baron Zemo, they've had 16 different iterations of Baron Zemo that they've playtested.
Exactly.
It could have been one of those things, but there has been no precedent for this yet, aside from Domino. Domino's the one thing, which I think Domino makes sense. This one,
right.
Especially with all the muscle memory we have, it feels so weird. And this one, unlike the movement tool, because I mentioned, like, I think that for casual play, you're fine doing the movement however you want. Mm-hmm. For competitive play, obviously, it makes a difference. This affects both sides.
Now, if you're playing casually,
this is how it works. You should not play it the previous way.
And I guess that, so, now maybe is a good time to introduce something like this, because IRL games are kicking back off more or less. You can start to introduce new players to the game using this. But if I'm a new player learning this game for the first time, or I don't have any games under my belt, I've got the stuff, but I haven't been able to get a chance to play yet. And you come to me and say, well, this is how it is now. And like, it's this level of complexity for a new player that I think is unnecessary, and that if you want to fix this, you don't just make a ruling on the forum and you don't just put an FAQ out. You errata the characters, in my opinion. This is a hammer to the situation, but you put out an errata for MODOK, for Shuri, for Star-Lord's winging it. Like, we'll get into that in a second.
Poor winging it.
I know. You have to put out an errata that specifically has the wording like Domino, whereas before resolving criticals. Because that, to me, is the key phrase that none of these abilities have, yet we're just saying that these things happen at this time. Like, I don't like it. I don't like it, and I want it to stop.
I definitely think that they should, this needs to go in the FAQ in some way. Like, it needs to be really thrown out there, because it has been so universally, I guess, misunderstood is the word I should use for this, because everyone's been doing it differently. In the very technical level, they're worded correctly. It does say after attack or defense dice or whatever are rolled, and that does introduce the timing window, but definitely at least if not an errata for previous, having a list of characters and abilities that this deals with, whether community made. I know there's some people working in the community to get a list, and so we can have a really good reference for it. if AMG could do it, even better. That way they don't have like 18 different erratas in the errata document, because that's a little excessive, and I know they want to keep errata low.
Of course.
And then I think that all future rules should definitely be worded like dominoes.
100%.
It's so much less... It's not confusing looking at the way Domino works, and you immediately understand how it interacts. The first question a lot of people have is, well, if I explode crits and they explode into more skulls, do they explode too? Which is no, because it's just how crits work. Sometimes the initial wrapping your head around it, they just behave as crits, not they behave as new crits.
Right.
Could be a little weird. But anyway, most people understand how Domino works. Now this is a bit weird, particularly because it's worded differently. It's a lot. And like you said, you mentioned complexity. This brings the complexity budget up a good bit.
Yeah.
It's going to slow games down too. Which I'll preface this also with, this isn't me complaining. This is just me stating, you know, opinions.
Yeah. I'm totally not complaining either. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
I have a little bit more reason to be neutral though.
You do. You are the accuser, so you must remain neutral unless I give you cookies. But that's neither here nor there, okay?
My kingdom for an Oreo. I do think it will slow games down. I do think it will bump the complexity budget up a little bit. And like I said, I don't think this is something that you can ignore in casual games, unlike the movement stuff. Like, it's not a nerf, but it effectively acts as a nerf to some of these abilities. It brings the power level down. It brings the risk up. So this is something that all players have to be made aware of, and they have to be playing. And that's the hard part, is you have to reteach an entire community how to use these abilities that have been, some of them, since the start of the game.
Right.
Because Duck was on release. And then Shuri, Wakanda, they were the very next release. Beast is more recent and also doesn't have the new wording, which, you know, or I say new wording, the wording like Domino, which I think should be the new wording to help people understand it a little better. A list of things it affects is going to be good in an FAQ, I think. To not ramble so much.
I'm with you, and I think that if the new wording isn't the default, well, AMG, you need to get it in the default stat, because it takes the ambiguity out of it. It takes any chance for this situation to arise again. And look, I love AMG. I've been a champion to say that they've done an incredible job to this point, and they still have, and they still are doing an incredible job, and the playtesters are all doing a great job. Like, everyone over there is crushing it, but I'm also not above criticism, and this is an instance where I've got to say, like, I kind of said this a little earlier, I feel like that this change is reactionary to something that wasn't really a problem. And I know that that's going to be a controversial take, okay? Like, I know everybody says, well, MODOK was so strong, Wakanda's so strong with, you know, you could Mantle, and then you could Shuri, and then you could Wakanda reroll. That was so strong, made things so consistent, blah, blah, blah. I understand that, and I understand that those things are strong. And this just feels to me like AMG saying, well, we've been coming out with all these new characters. We've been coming out with these other 5 threat characters. I'm going to reference MODOK specifically here. And none of them measure up to MODOK. So how do we fix MODOK in some way without reissuing a card or whatever? You know, and I feel like that this might be that kind of thing. And look, I could be wrong. I know that... I know some of the people over there at AMG listen to this, and so if I'm wrong, I would, you know, if it was just a, no, this is how it's supposed to be, it's how it's been all along, that's fine. I can accept that answer and everything, but it just feels like a kind of like, all right, let's take a look and maybe see what people have been doing wrong, maybe, and here you go. And I think that this, we can kind of look at it from a way of like, okay, Hulk, right? We all remember Hulk and how for the first month he was out, basically, he was played in such a way where as soon as he was through his 20 health, what did we all do?
Picked him up off the table.
Picked him up off the table because he was dead, right? Right. And the clarification came out that no, he actually does get dazed. He is a candidate for field dressing. So have fun with that. And that's great. Like, that's a great clarification.
I also think the two things I want to comment on that too is, one, when we first got him, it didn't matter because you could interact with dazed characters. Field dressing came out, and that's when the clarification came out because then it mattered.
Right.
Then we had a reason to ask about it. And then, two, like, it's very easy to do an initial read of the card and say, oh, when he's dead, he KOs instead of flipping. Cool. When you hear that ruling and you reread the card, it really is this eureka moment of, oh, that is what it says. I can't believe I missed that.
Yeah. And
so I definitely, like, it has that same like precedent, like that same level of change, but the Hulk one feels better because it makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's ways to interact with it. So, but this is much different. This is much more nebulous and a little bit more complex.
Right. And you mentioned earlier the complexity budget. And I think that is the thing with all of this that we have been told, like we as the community have been told, this is a beer and pretzels superhero game. We want to make it as clean and as tight as possible to get you throwing dice, having fun. And it still functions in that way, but because of such a big change, even if it's just to these few characters, right? Like, Beast isn't played all that much, really, you know, but MODOK's played a lot. Black Panther's played a lot. Shuri's played a lot. Like, some of these characters are played very regularly, if you will. And now this change takes it from being this beer and pretzel-y thing to now you've got to think about this technical aspect of it. And it's just, I don't know. It just feels weird. And it feels like a response to something that, quote unquote, was a problem. But also, I mean, you can deal with Wakanda. You can deal with MODOK. Like, there's things you can do to deal with these other things, even if they are strong and consistent. They aren't ridiculous, I feel like. They aren't broken.
Yeah, and like, as mentioned before, I will not specifically say one way or the other, whether or not I think that this was like a response to anything other than a ruling.
You coward. I'm kidding.
I'm going to refrain from that one, but I will say, you know, in regards to like complexity budget, I do feel like, this is a bit, I've always admired the way they've done these rules and how it is a casual game first that can be played competitively.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really weird exception now where a casual player has to mind the timing chart. And let me tell you, I don't think casual players really like timing charts that much.
No.
You know, I don't know. I haven't played with it yet, so I'm not sure how I like it, but definitely on initial reaction, it feels weird. Poor Star-Lord getting absolutely poo-pooed on again.
Yeah,
also feels really bad.
Let's talk about that for a second. So, you know, we've been talking about things that are superpowers that cost X. Beast, Black Panther, MODOK, Shuri, those characters, right? After another allied character, after this character, blah, blah, blah. So, Star-Lord, though, oh my gosh. So, winging it tokens, let's read this leadership because it's been a while since we talked about it. Once per round, at the start of your turn, you may choose an allied character and discard a team's tactics card to use this leadership ability. The chosen character gains 3 winging it tokens. Now here's the important part. After rolling attack dice, defense dice, or dodge dice, it may discard one winging it token to re-roll up to two of its dice. One winging it can be used once per roll. Got it. Okay, so the key phrase, according to the forum, is the after rolling attack dice, defense dice, or dodge dice. And to me, this is where that complexity budget just ramps up a little bit, or just the we're going to mess with English thing, I guess you could say, ramps up, where it says, what is after rolling attack dice, defense dice, or dodge dice? To me, that's, in terms of the timing chart, as a semi-casual, semi-competitive player, I guess I toe that line a little bit. That means that at any point after I roll these dice, I should be able to do this. But no, no, no. Star-Lord now, and his leadership that was arguably the least good one, arguably.
Not arguably.
I mean, I'm just trying. All right, so I made some pretty bold statements in this podcast. This might be the boldest, most fired up podcast I think I've had. Like, this is the spicy one, y'all. So there you go.
But Caliente.
But it's not the greatest. And now you're just taking it and you're saying you have to commit to using those winging it tokens before you even know if you'd need to. That's ridiculous.
I think it's just tradition at this point. If there is a major update, Star-Lord has to get, like, or change or clarification. Star-Lord is negatively affected by it in some way.
Seriously.
I have seen people talk about this being a nerf, and you mentioned it a little bit, this being a nerf to some of those big characters. If that was the case, again, I will not say whether or not I think it is the case or not, because I don't know. So any, I feel like any response I would make, especially as an accuser, would just be a little bit unfair for that.
I respect that.
This does also impact Star-Lord. So if it was a nerf, it also affects characters like him, which is, it feels bad for Star-Lord.
But right.
And I can't help but laugh at Star-Lord.
I know. And he feels like he's just like the bystander that's gotten hit in the crossfire, you know, of this nerf, if you will. And that's the thing. Like, what does this functionally do for Black Panther? Let's use him as an example. So Black Panther's playing, and the timing of Mantle of the Black Panther, which allows you to reroll all of your attack dice, obviously, as long as they're not skulls. So the timing of that doesn't change. You have to pay for that before you even roll your attack dice. That's step one, basically, is pay for your Mantle the Black Panther. Great. So the thing is, though, like, a lot of the timing of it that we did before was roll your dice, roll your crits, Mantle of the Black Panther. And now it's roll your dice.
Mantle roll.
Yeah, this is so weird. So you're like, you mantle, you roll your dice, and then you have to decide whether or not you're going to have Shuri throw that in there, and whether or not you're going to have Wakanda reroll in there. But why would you ever do that at this point if you're going to mantle, if you've already paid for mantle, because you're rerolling your whole dice anyways? Like, to me, it changes the dynamic of that character a lot. It changes the dynamic of how Shuri's used. She went from being one of the best characters in the game to now it's like, well, you got to commit to this ahead of time. She should have the power to burn, but at the same time, eh. I mean, just...
Yeah, I like and dislike it in some ways, right? So talking about it, acting as a nerf, once again, not saying it is, acting as a nerf. So now Wakanda, rather than going, all right, I mantle the Black Panther and I strike. Oh, I rolled one success. Well, now I'm going to reroll all those successes. Oh, look, I rolled one extra success in that roll. So now I have two total. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to use Shuri and reroll three of them. Oh, well, two of them rolled successes. I still got that King of Wakanda, and now I've got five successes. Or, and let's extend that to my opponent. I roll, I see my opponent's roll. we have now matched attack and defense dice.
Mm-hmm.
So before, well, let's say they rolled nothing and you rolled one, like in my previous example, now you have the capability to pump all that power into killing that character.
Yeah.
So against the defenseless character. Now, when you're an attacker, you have to think, do I want to go for maximum successes? Another thing that people would do in Wakanda is reroll their attack dice to lose attack dice sometimes, or lose successes, so they would do no damage and deny power to the enemy.
Right.
This is going to help you, or going to help basically make you commit earlier so that you're not getting that, like we talk about consistency, because the consistency is one of their biggest strengths.
Yeah.
And I like that aspect. I love the idea of making Wakanda choose before they know and risk, because they're one of the few factions that don't have a lot of risk. There's so much certainty, or more certainty anyway, with Wakanda than other affiliations. It is at the cost of the complexity budget, though, because but there are positives to the change, is what I'm getting at.
Right. Yeah. And I do agree with you that it's a positive change insofar as trying to kind of lower that effectiveness of those abilities. Because you're right, like that pattern of being able to just stack all that stuff on there can feel oppressive. And it, to me, though, it's one of those things that it doesn't, like, how do I want to put this? It's so niche. It feels bad, but it doesn't happen all the time. And it's something that in a game of spiky ridiculousness, you just made a decision to change something that helped with the spiky ridiculousness to make something like to in turn make it more fun in a way. Like, it feels bad when you have that stack happen to you, but at the same time, how many times have we played a game? How many times have you heard me on this dadgum podcast be like, yep, you know, I rolled and I had a negative spike, as in didn't get hardly any successes, or I rolled and I had an insane spike and it won me the game. Like, those kind of things are fun, and I understand that that's the intent, but like being able to kind of have a thing mitigate that in some kind of way was kind of fun and kind of interesting. And it's not like everyone and their mom was out there like running the table with Wakanda. You know what I mean?
And it has, so, like, won a lot. It does win a lot.
They do. And this brings up a whole other discussion that I reference with to the podcast I did with Vince the other day, where we talk about Longshanks, and you will see if people adopt Longshanks, you can see those statistics stack up. And at this point, with this change, whatever you see on Longshanks will not matter now in terms of like until later on. But this will definitely bring Wakanda back, so to speak, into the more middle of the road, like some of the other factions that we have or the affiliations that we have. So I think that it's something that you're taking a defining characteristic of the affiliation and you're hitting it with the Nerf hammer, if you will. You're watering it down a little bit and making it less potent. And I can understand trying to limit the negative play experience that comes from that chain that you talked about. But it also feels to me like, again, as that semi-competitive but also casual player, the complexity budget's going up now. And the understanding of like when you need to do this thing. And it's like, oh, my opponent went ahead and rolled their crit. Well, now you don't get to roll that reroll that you wanted to do now. Ha ha.
You know, I will say on that, we are declaring it. I don't want to mention this for the TTS finalists and for future TTS stuff. Our ruling, if it changes, we'll let you know. And I'm going to let everyone know that I'm announcing it here, is that if you roll your attack dice with your MODOK,
mm-hmm.
Will, and then I go ahead and roll my defense dice out of habit. Well, normally that would lock you out of getting to, you know, declare your rerolls, because now that step is passed. But what we're going to do is, or if you're in a situation where your opponent skips a step it doesn't let you declare rerolls. You're still going to get your rerolls, and they're not going to get to reroll. I'm not going to get to reroll a defense dice,
sure.
Which actually helps you. It's more like the traditional sense where you get to see my roll and understand. So it actually ends up helping you if I make that mistake.
Yeah.
So we do know that that's, we were aware that that's, you know, there is that potential for accidentally moving on as an opponent, or, and I'm not going to say that I think anyone would actually do it, but there is the chance, you know, someone maliciously would skip to deny rerolls.
Oh, dude.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. We're not going to let that happen.
That's a good thing. But I also think that there's an ecosystem within, like, a closed ecosystem within TTS. And you know, like, we're all part of this community, right? We all try to make this community as good as possible. But we can only reach so far, right? And there's plenty of people that are going to go to events now, and they're going to pick up their attack dice, roll their attack dice, their opponent's going to immediately roll their defense dice, or even simultaneously, and then it's like, well, that opportunity for that reroll is gone, and you're going to be at an event, and a judge is going to be like, yep, opportunity's gone, sorry. You know, like, you guys as accusers within TTS, that's great that y'all can agree on that. But what we need to have happen is that an FAQ or something needs to come out and, like, look, this is the common pattern. I mean, I can't tell you how many games I've been in where I'm literally rolling my defense dice before my opponent even rolls their attack dice because nothing's going to change.
All the time.
It's all the time. And that's I think that should be okay. And it is okay in any normal sense of the game. And it's going to be okay in terms of, like, how you guys address it as accusers. That's great. But, like, again, if you're listening to this and you don't have friends that listen to this, that's fine. But just try to spread the word of, be good stewards of the fun that is this game, and don't be so harsh to just be that malicious guy that says, or gal or person that says, you know what, they're going to roll their attack dice, I'm going to make sure I roll my defense dice as fast as possible to keep them from rerolling. But then we've talked about it a couple of times already, bringing up the complexity level. So now you are having to slow the game down to, if you're trying to do it right, not roll your defense dice so that you can wait on your opponent to make those decisions. And I can tell you right now, that is not going to be a fast decision sometimes. So,
yeah. Well, and, like, I think that what this will create is an error, and I've already talked about it a little bit in some areas, but I think from now, when I'm in a competitive game, especially my when a die is rolled and I'm waiting for my step, I'm going to just ask, can I roll my dice?
Yeah.
For a few reasons. One, it's a bit of the magic player, ex-magic player in me that doesn't want to tell you, I know you've got Shuri, so if you forget, you know, I keep going. Competitive. Once again, competitive play. But also, that way I don't accidentally forget myself. I don't have to pay attention to all your rerolls, essentially.
Right.
Or accidentally miss one. So, like, if you've got Shuri, and I forgot that Beast can also reroll his, and I'm attacking Beast,
mm-hmm.
I may remember Shuri, and so I don't just go, hey, you gonna reroll Shuri? And they're like, yeah, I will reroll Shuri, and then forget that they can do Beast because I said Shuri.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen either. But I'm going to be trying to practice the, can I roll my defense dice? Can I roll my crits? Can I explode my crits? You know, whatever. It does slow the game down. It will slow the game down a lot. Because like you said, I also would just roll my defense dice in with my opponent's attack dice. I actually remember my last game I played with a local, Terrence. I was literally going, all right, he wouldn't even get his attack dice picked up, and I already had my defense dice rolled. I'm like, oh, I rolled nothing. Just roll attack.
Yeah.
Just roll any amount of damage and you kill me. And just to keep the game flow, just to keep it moving.
100%.
This kind of takes that away for these characters, especially. But as a proper competitive player, you kind of, because you can't keep everything in mind, you kind of just have to do it for everything now.
Yeah.
You kind of just have to always be on your guard that, you know, maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah.
I do want to comment on one thing that we kind of bypassed. I didn't get a chance to say this. So we talked about this being bringing down MODOK and Wakanda and all these characters and bringing them closer to the middle. One thing I've thought about that maybe would be an interesting thing for the community to discuss is maybe one of the reasons they were so considered so strong is because we've played it this way and it was incorrect. And if this was the correct way to play it all along, maybe now they are closer to their intended power level. And that's why we felt they've been so powerful. We've just been playing it wrong the whole time.
Yeah. And it's one of those things that it's going to have to gel and we're going to have to see if that bears out. And at first glance, I think it will. I mean, I played against MODOK a few weeks ago against a local here, Yusuf. Very fun guy to play against. He's very awesome. He's a good player. And he had MODOK, and I was playing X-Force, and every single time, I would need to be pushing like one or two damage through, and he would wait on that MODOK reroll till the last second, and then, boop, he'd get it every time. And it'd be nice to be like, all right, well, now you have... It will be nice to have to commit to that. And MODOK is a power factory. Same thing with Shuri, power factory. So, like, it shouldn't be too big of a deal, but it will be nice to say that you have to commit to it ahead of time and therefore limit the potential for other things that those characters can do. So,
yep. That now with MODOK, when you roll two blanks and he's next to Zemo, you have to decide, do I want to pay two so I can reroll in case Zemo doesn't do it? Or do I risk it and pay for one, reroll, and then only reroll two?
Right. Exactly. So it's going to be very interesting. And then the final actual change that we got here today, I don't know if you saw this one yet, was that Sam Wilson's leadership will be errated to the following. When this character or another allied character is dazed or KO'd, choose a non-dazed allied character. After the effect is resolved, the chosen character removes one damage, removes one special condition, and may advance short. A character can be affected by this leadership ability only once per turn. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, that sounds exactly the same, it kind of does, but the point of this whole thing here, I don't actually know what word changes, but...
After the effect is resolved.
That's it, after the effect is resolved, because basically what it means is, if you're doing a beam attack, for instance, after each individual attack is resolved, you get to trigger his leadership. So if you've got three characters lined up, they are still going to get hit. You can move them out of that line, but they have already been targeted. Therefore, they will still be hit. So very important to note, but you can still move them out of the way, even though they're going to get hit. But really where it matters the most is for things like flurry and stuff like that. So you still get your flurry because the effect hasn't been fully resolved yet. Because of the whole, like, Medusa with nesting attack stuff. So even if a character gets moved out of the way, you still get to do the thing.
Yep.
Think about it.
Yeah, this makes you wait until basically your opponent's action or superpower is just completely done. And then whoever's remaining can start benefiting from the ability.
Exactly.
It's like you said, flurry is probably the biggest place. Because even in a beam, even if you could interrupt the beam to move, it wouldn't get you out of the attack.
Exactly. But flurry's the big one because that's the one where it's not fully resolved until the flurry itself is done. So important.
It also means that after like a Medusa nested push stuff, if she like kills somebody, which would trigger your ability, and then she attacks someone else and pushes them, the effect resolves and now you can walk back.
Right. So that's an important thing to note, and I think it's a really cool bit of a change. It doesn't really affect that much in terms of how you want to function with Sam, but very interesting.
Very good clarification.
Exactly. This is a good clarification.
This is one that Will doesn't get angry at.
No, I'm not angry. I'm disappointed. I'm just kidding.
That's arguably worse.
No, I'm just
this
kidding.
This is worse.
I know. I'm just kidding. No, it's... Look. I've been on top of this soapbox with this hot spicy chili pepper, you know, just dripping from my mouth apparently through this whole podcast, and it's just because it's one of those things, like, you know, someone's trying to mess with how I play with my toys, and it's it it makes sense in a rules as written way. And I don't like it necessarily. I think it kind of takes a little something interesting out of the game. But okay, fine. We're going to have to live with this. And I encourage people to try to do it this way. And I'm with you. Operate like the accusers. If your opponent rolls their defense dice super fast after you roll your attack dice, then they messed up. That's on their on them for not letting you make that decision first. You know what I mean? So just let that go and still play and have fun with the game. I don't think that this ruins Marvel Crisis Protocol. I know we're making a big stink about it. I am making a big stink about it. But it doesn't ruin MCP. It affects things, and I think that the wording could be done a little better. But it's still a great game. And the amount of characters that this affects compared to the total amount of characters that we have in the game is like 5% of characters or something like that. So, you know,
that, yeah.
It's still very, very small use case, and most things aren't changing. So get out there and have some fun with the games. Merzane, where can people find you?
So again, I'm an accuser and a Dark Illuminati member for the TTS leagues. So I help organize, and I can also tell you rule stuff. I am part of the Turn Zero crew, so I occasionally go on there and talk. We just did the big tier list podcast thing that was absolutely freaking buck wild. If you want to go look at that, it's 5 hours long though. Heads up.
Whee.
And I also have my own podcast, Advanced R&D, where we have people build lists live and then play them against someone else who did the same thing. I say live, we record it.
Close enough.
It's as live as this is right now.
Exactly. So, yeah, Suits, make sure to go check those things out. Hit Merzane up on the Discords, all that stuff. He loves to talk, let me tell you.
Yes. Feel free to message me if you have questions, especially about TTS League or Sinister. I've been answering a lot of personal chats about Sinister. Since yes. I played Sinister.
You are the Sinister aficionado at this point. And Suits, make sure to send us messages on Facebook. Let us know how you feel about this change. I want to hear from the community out there. You can comment on the post when I make this post. Also, make sure to check the description for links to all of these changes so you can get that. And send us messages, like I said, on Facebook. If you're a patron, you can send us messages on our Discord. If you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/houseparty protocol. It's $1 a month, so 12 bucks a year to come and hang out and chit-chat. And we have a lot of fun discussions over there. Everybody makes fun of me for going to the gym for like an hour and a half. You know, it's cool. I say makes fun.
Hey, get those gains.
Get those
gains. Don't let anybody shame you out of those gains.
That's right. I it's gains indeed. And you can also email us at housepartyprotocolpod@gmail.com. And Merzane, thanks for coming in for the hot, spicy, chili pepper of a take that this was.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Party on, Merzane.
You too.
And power down, Suits.